This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink, inspiring public curiosity about food. Learn more at mofad.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, where a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm HRN's Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week, we're celebrating Valentine's Day. Whether it's your favorite day of the season or you avoid it like the plague, there's no debating it's a big day for the world of food and hospitality.
Valentine's Day is what we refer to in the industry as a blackout day.
I don't feel that my manlyhood is threatened when I order a glass of rosé or, God forbid, a rosé champagne.
It's an old Jamaican drink from way back, and we just decided to bring it back into existence. A drink that the men, they believe it really does wonders.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good evening, and welcome to Eating Matters, where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. I'm your host, Jenna Liute, and we're broadcasting from Roberta's on Heritage Radio Network. One of the best parts about hosting a food policy show is that I get to talk to a wide range of people and organizations in the industry doing their part to create a healthier and more sustainable food system. The Chefs Collaborative is one such organization. It's a national nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Joining me in the studio today to talk more about what they're doing to create a better food system are three different people. We have Derek Wagner. He's the chef and owner at Nick's on Broadway in Providence. We have Jake Rojas, who is also the chef of Tallulah's Taqueria, also in Providence. And we have Mark Oshima, the co-founder and chief marketing officer at Arrow Farms. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Welcome to the show. This is, like, pretty amazing. I have to say, this is the most amount of people I've had in the studio on with me. And the fact that you guys are in person is thrilling because most of my guests are on the phone. So this is like a really big deal.
Well, we're happy to be here.
You guys are like great.
And the pizza smells great.
And the pizza is amazing. Yeah. Well, it's tempting on the other side of the glass. I watch people eat all day long and it's a little torturous sometimes. So hopefully you're not too hungry yet. Okay. So let's get into it. The Chefs Collaborative. I kind of gave a really brief overview, but Mark, do you want to kick us off and tell us, like, you know, a little bit more about the organization, when it was founded, and what work you're kind of doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're happy to share. And as you mentioned, you know, we're like a community, and the fact that we have so many people here and representing so many different voices is really what is the power of Chefs Collaborative. And Chefs Collaborative has an amazing history, 25 years. It started in 1993, even before the topics of sustainability were even thinking about and being entertained. And so this has been one of the organizations we're thinking about, you know, how to have relevancy for the next 25 years and laying that foundation and thinking about what has been core, what has been really the guiding principles, you know, for the organization. And so we actually want to take a moment and really actually read, before any meeting that we have, we actually read the six guiding principles that have really stood the test of time and have been really guiding the organization. And so if you bear with me, I just want to go through it.
Yeah. But
first and foremost, food is fundamental to life, nourishing us in body and soul. The preparation of food strengthens our connection to nature, and the sharing of food immeasurably enriches our sense of community. Good food begins with unpolluted air, land, and water, environmentally sustainable farming and fishing, and humanely animal husbandry. Food choices that emphasize delicious, locally grown, seasonally fresh, and whole or minimally processed ingredients are good for us, for local farming communities, and for the planet. Cultural and biological diversity are essential for the health of the earth and its inhabitants. Preserving and revitalizing sustainable food, fishing, and agriculture traditions strengthens that diversity. By continually educating themselves about sustainable choices, chefs can serve as models to the culinary community and the general public through their purchases of seasonal, sustainable ingredients and the transformation of these ingredients into delicious food. And the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by creating a market for good food and helping preserve local farming and fishing communities. And it's really these principles that have been the guiding in terms of the vision, which is around sustainable practices will be second nature for every chef in the United States. And so we're talking about building on the shoulders of really major people in the organization. So people like Alice Waters, Rick Bayless were part of the founding, you know, members. Mm-hmm. And we think about the impact on the broader ecosystem. What we're excited about Chefs Collaborative is, you know, really by the chefs and for the chefs and really for the broader food system.
Well done.
Okay, I'm going home.
Mic drop, done. So what is it? It's a membership organization. Are you advocacy? Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, it's a membership organization that does advocacy work. Also, we these days especially partner with other organizations on advocacy work specifically. Mm-hmm. But it is a membership organization that's primarily focused on providing resource and connection for professional food service people, chefs, cooks, mm-hmm. students, front of the house too, but with a real focus on people that are purchasing and transforming food.
So I want to step back and get a little bit more about your backgrounds and mm-hmm. how you kind of each became involved with this organization. Mm-hmm. So Jake, can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, your experience as a chef? When did you, you're a chef owner and sorry, yeah. Do you own Tallulah?
Yeah, chef owner. So I had I have a fast casual taco shop now, but, you know, kind of started out with this kind of farm to fork restaurant that was hyper focused on sourcing local animals, local agriculture and aquaculture being that we're in Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And I moved to the East Coast from Southern California, and I was having a hard time being in Newport, Rhode Island, finding local sustainable fish.
Okay.
Right. So that was the one that started for me.
Yeah.
Like, how do we only have salmon and tuna from these purveyors, and why don't we have blackfish and tautog and, you know, striped sea bass and so on and so forth.
That are also native to these waters.
That are native to the Rhode Island waters, mm-hmm. right? And I was just, I was kind of hitting the wall trying to figure out, like, you know, how come no one else is having this problem? So,
because nobody else cares as much?
I think that might have been the reason, potentially. Yeah. But, you know, then I kind of got hooked up with Derek, who at the time was a member of Chefs Collaborative and kind of shared some knowledge with me and hooked me up with, some local fishermen that were doing some really, really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where it started for me. And this was in 2011-ish.
Mark, you are not a chef. Are you a chef? In addition to being a chief marketing officer, do you chef?
Enthusiast.
Cooking, yes,
but,
yes.
By no means a chef, but what I am is inspired, you know, by these incredible role models. When we talk about advocacy, I think the greatest aspect of that is not just how you vote with your fork, but, you know, again, what do you stand for? What do you show up for? And Chefs Collaborative has an incredible set of role models that serve as inspiration for me. And we think about the entire food system. It's the chefs and ultimately what you're doing with the product, but it's also the sourcing. And for me, the journey started with the farming. And so I'm one of the co-founders for Aero Farms, indoor vertical farming. And the idea of how do we enable local production, create a greater connection with your food, mm-hmm. is one element. And thinking about, again, how do we do more with less? And so the idea that we can grow with 95% less water and no pesticides is an important part of the story.
Your company does.
And that's
yeah.
what Aero Farms is yeah. really focused on. And so there's a lot of good alignment and shared values. But for me, this is really a nexus in terms of, like, why do I volunteer? Why am I part of the board? It's really this nexus of personal and professional in terms of thinking about what kind of impact. And again, how do we continue this legacy? And so it's really an important and endeavor to think about how do we create that ongoing mm-hmm. Impact that we can do.
And Derek, do you just want to give us, briefly how you came to work at the Chefs Collaborative or work with the Collaborative?
You know, I grew up in Rhode Island on the coast, and I couldn't figure out how to buy local seafood for my restaurant. You know, I knew where the docks were. I knew where the port was, but there wasn't an infrastructure or process or an availability. And there was a lot of misinformation mm-hmm. out there, especially in seafood. But
yeah, it's a very convoluted,
so convoluted and so opaque. And it started from curiosity, and it started from just a desire to have the best product, the most delicious product that really expressed when I decided to not leave Rhode Island and open a restaurant in Rhode Island mm-hmm. instead of moving to one of the big cities. I made a thought that I wanted to use food and share ingredients that expressed a sense of place. And it was really hard. You know, I could drive to farms and buy produce and bring it back to the restaurant, but I couldn't. Meat and seafood was a huge obstacle, infrastructure-wise, process-wise. There was just nothing there.
Yeah.
You had to buy from a big packer. You had to buy from
a distributor. So how has your work with Chefs Collaborative changed in that particular instance, as like an example of the work that you guys have done?
It really snowballed from that sort of fire that turned into anger, that turned into like, you know, what is, you know, just this is in, like, I can't be the only one that this is happening to. And I found these other chefs. I went to a meeting in Boston at Craigie on Main, actually, and met a couple of chefs up there and talked to them about some things that they were doing. And I met some fishermen that came down to the restaurant. We sat down and we started talking about their challenges and my challenges, and what their goal was to get more local fish in chefs' hands. And my goal was like,
I would like to get it.
Yeah. And I would also like to help you get it to other people also, mm-hmm. because it wasn't just for me. I wanted, you know, for me, I've always wanted to, you know, do something bigger than myself or help other people and help the community, help my, you know, my peers to also do better and have more. And that was a great window into that. And we started working on the Bristol Bay salmon. I don't know if I got the dates right, but you know, not too far after that was when Pebble Mine was happening and Bristol Bay salmon was in danger. And Chefs Collaborative really came to the call for that and did a lot of work to help catalyze like a resistance towards building those mines and ruining those fisheries.
Right.
And, So that was like really a call to arms nationally. That showed me the power of the collaborative.
So you met up with the you used it through networking, right? To mm-hmm. kind of have like a professional organization that you can tap into for questions like sourcing, things like that.
Everything to the nuance of I'm having, you know, trouble connecting with my sous chef or my
right,
cook
so to, all around support.
To like, you know, how can I make sure that I'm sourcing and buying and serving seafood that's not, you know, in danger of participating in slave labor in mm-hmm. Indonesia or Polynesia.
Yeah, frozen,
you
know, like, or been around the world,
you know, like
three times.
Yeah, it takes
frozen four times,
five times, you know, bleached.
I like
or
it frozen five.
Grown in time.
You like the frozen, you think it's best, you think it's like that's so, fifth time's a charm. It's just like, it's terrible.
A little chemical dip. No.
Yeah.
But it takes it really very fluidly goes macro and micro, the questions and the resources and also the meetings. You know, we'll have local meetings or we'll have national meetings or we'll have these phone calls where we've got our local leaders from all over the country that are talking to each other about these either successes or challenges that they're having.
And I want to talk a little bit about the network, you know, what that looks like. But mm-hmm. first, I, you know, just a question mark. Can you tell us kind of what your big priority issues are? Like, you know, what have they been in the past? Have they transitioned? I'm just throwing all of this out on the table. Mm-hmm. So we'll start with you, Mark. But like, yeah, I mean, I would say, what are the priorities that have been, you know, kind of set in the past and how have they evolved over time?
Yeah, sure. So it's really been a core focus on when we talk about sustainability and we talk a little bit about three core areas that have been sort of pillars for the organization. One is on what we call seafood solutions. One's on meat matters. Another one's on food waste. So mm-hmm. thinking again about how do we be resourceful with our sourcing? How do we be judicious? How do we think about that ecosystem? So how we can support a broader group there? And I think when we think about the organization, a definition of sustainability has evolved, and it's not just about the sourcing, it's about the entire restaurant, the whole space. And so it's about the chef, it's about the team members, it's about worker welfare. So we think about a broader set of issues in terms of how to run a successful operation and have that have the right impact. And so what's exciting to see is that Chefs Collaborative has a continuous core that can and has been able to evolve and be able to address a broader set of constituents.
Yeah. I'm interested in how it's evolved, you know, what the kind of the organization has looked like and how it's adapted to. We have, you know, we're obviously, we live in a social media fueled world and it is way easier to kind of make these connections. You know, you have like Facebook groups and listservs and a lot of different ways to reach people and to create these online communities. So, you know, how is the kind of the organization evolved over time? And what are the changes like that social media have brought into it?
It's certainly, you know, and even from a small business owner perspective, you know, when social media came about, and that happened really right in the middle of my, you know, business. I opened in 2002, and that was still at the tail end of print media, and like where, you know, if you didn't have five or $10,000 to drop a half or quarter page ad in something,
yeah,
you know, you needed a publicist or you needed this massive amount of resource to get in even a ticket into the game of, you know, having some kind of exposure or connection. And that was not something I had, and that as many small business owners didn't have. And I think when social media came around, it sort of, I don't want to say leveled the playing field, but at least gave an alternative point of access for small businesses to, you know, one, connect directly
to each other
and also to the end user, the guests, right? Yeah. And back and forth. And then also to each other, and also to share their story in a really authentic, non-filtered way, in many, many cases way, in real time, 24 hours a day. And what that did for, I think, for groups like us was, again, it created, you know, a space and time where things were in real time and you were less encumbered by distance or by financial resource on how you had access to each other or access to information. And I think that was huge for this type of work or this type of philosophy, and also just people, what we like to say, people on a journey, like chefs or cooks on a journey, like wherever they are in that journey, the beginning of their career, the end of their career, the middle, the meat and potatoes of it, like what that people that are really on the rise and doing well, but you know, like how do you tap into this vast network, or how do you gain access to people and resources and not have to show up to an event that you had to pay $500 for a ticket to and then feel like, you know, you're just a member of the audience. You know, and one of the things that we've always done is you may be, you know, and this has happened, like I've ended up on a bus next to Rick Bayless or like, you know, and like we're just like talking like as we're on our way to the next, you know, event.
And
you know, it's sort of like we've always been able to find this way to create a real sense of community where you could have a culinary student or an owner operator or a chef that works for a company that's in his first or second year or her first or second year of being that in that position sitting next to, you know,
so that's like
Mary Sue Milliken or,
that's,
you know,
the,
like,
and that's the in-person kind of connection. So Jake, I want to bring you back in. This is a conversation. So have you, you are a local leader, right? A chapter leader?
I am.
And what does that entail? Like, you know, I think we talked a little bit about social media, but obviously the in-person connection has got to be super important to kind of create and build your local network. So what does that mean, you know, to you and your work with a collaborative?
Well, first and foremost, I think the major point that I think we try to instill is that you're building community and you're involved in your community, because that's where it starts. I mean, that's where the change starts is within our own four walls, that we spend the majority of our time in, but then, you know, also within our neighborhoods. And whether it's a small town or, you know, a big city, I think there's a lot of opportunity to make change. So as a local leader, you know, one of the major things is outreach. You know, we kind of have this open line of communication that is there for, you know, anybody that has potential obstacles. For where we're at in Rhode Island, in Providence, especially, you know, we've got Johnson and Wells that's just, you know, a hop, skip, and jump away from, you know, anywhere in
the culinary city. School.
Yeah, the culinary mm-hmm. school. So, you know, we do quite a bit of outreach with them. Derek and I have sat on, you know, the Sustainable and Wellness Board to help create, you know, curriculum for the up-and-coming generation of chefs that are going to make change. So, you know, as a whole, you know, someone that is a local leader, and we have local leaders, you know, all over the nation, which is super cool. But just I realistically, I think starting in the community is the one part that we really, really try to empower.
So that means like getting involved with local organizations and other meeting other chefs. And does that a lot of that work happen in person also?
Oh, for sure. I mean, we have, you know, biannual and annual. We just had a, you know, the Harvest Barbecue, which, you know, we raised, you know, a bit of money for Chefs Collaborative, but we bring our community of chefs, you know, 15 or 16 of them, all into the same, you know, onto the same farm.
Yeah.
And we never get the opportunity to do these things because we're just all so busy, you know, just trying to sustain ourselves, you know, so it's like
very important.
That is, I think, the important part is, you know, being able to do that before we kind of hit the, you know.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a really quick break and take hear a word from our sponsors, but stay tuned because we've got a lot more conversation coming up.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. Featuring a variety of interactive displays, MOFAD encourages eaters of all ages to be curious about food. The museum currently operates MOFAD Lab, a 5,000-square-foot experimental space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where Chow, making the Chinese-American restaurant, is currently on show until the end of March 2019. This exhibition celebrates the birth and evolution of Chinese-American restaurants, tracing their nearly 170-year history, and sparking conversations about food culture, immigration, and what it means to be American. It highlights the evolution timeline of Chinese-American restaurant menus, dating back to 1910, and also highlights a tasting section where participants get to enjoy tastings created by the country's most talented chefs who specialize in Chinese-American cuisine. Make sure you check out Chow while you still can. The exhibition closes at the end of March 2019. Check out MOFAD's tastings and extensive event calendar at mofad.org/events.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Allison Kane, and I'm the host of In the Sauce here on HRN. Now that I'm expanding my cooking school to a sauce line in grocery stores, I need all the help I can get. And I want to help other entrepreneurs build their brands, too. You can find In the Sauce wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
And we're back. We are talking with the Chefs Collaborative, some of their key members. We have in the studio Mark Oshima from Arrow Farms, Derek Wagner from Nick's on Broadway, and Jake Rojas from Tallulah's Taqueria. Before we went on break, we were talking a little bit about kind of the power of this network and, you know, how do you reach people? And Mark, you said something really interesting when we were on break about how, you know, like what this organization actually does and how it's not just words, you said.
Yeah, just to build on some of the things that both Derek and Jake shared, things that I've seen that have been so powerful, it's not just about community connection, it's about context and how to make it relevant. And really providing the tools for the chefs and restaurateurs and people in the food system to make better choices and actually, you know, think about how to have a mentor or a coach in the context of, you know, how to do better. And this is what's really powerful, what I've seen in terms of the history of the Chefs Collaborative, is making that impact and helping. When we think about the founding members, people like Alice Waters or Rick Bayless or other
chairmen. I've heard of them.
Other chairmen like...
Once or twice.
People from the board like Michelle Nishan. People have gone off and have done tremendous things and impact. And it started with that Chefs Collaborative of coming together, recognizing the impact of that collective and really how it's not just the individual, but it's really the power of everybody amplifying, you know, the work. And so the thing that I continue to hear is that this is really, you know, if you will, the working person's group, and that you're giving the right tools to the people to make better decisions and very actionable, very tangible decisions.
Yeah. Do you think, I've got a couple of questions. Do you think that this like kind of drive towards, when you think about sustainability and all the things that could mean, I mean, you know, Mark, I'm curious as to your opinion. Do you think that this is like a new kind of concept or focus or emphasis for the industry? Like we have the leaders, like, I mean, Alice Waters and Rick Bayless, they're the pioneers, mm-hmm. I would say, but maybe not necessarily the norm. So I'm curious, actually, all of your opinions, like, has this been a big sea change in the industry over the past 20 years or so? Yeah, Mark, you want to start?
I would say the foundation has been, and really Chefs Collaborative has really been really about the chef community, and it's been more, if you will, B2B, if you will, not as much consumer facing. And
right.
that where we see the big sea change is on the consumer front, in terms of really, we think about transparency, mm-hmm. awareness, you think about the trends in terms of people thinking about where their food is coming from, where it's sourced, how it's prepared. You talked about social media. Those are all things that are helping provide tools to be able to have, you know, again, that more transparency. So it's helping fuel, again, a different awareness. And what we see as an opportunity with Chefs Collaborative is really kind of how to take the veil off and really be able to share all the good work that's being and happening, you know, behind the scenes, and really be able to celebrate and really be able to think about, again, how the broader community benefits, because it's a broader ecosystem, and
right.
and you really need all participants, mm-hmm. and not only voting with the wallet, but also just raising awareness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that extends to other chefs is what you're saying also, because I want the chef perspective. Mm-hmm. So like Jake, do you think that all chefs are really worried about this? It's a very broad question, but I guess I imagine that a lot of times, you know, mm-hmm. restaurant work is really hard and the margins are thin. And a lot of times you don't, you know, certain chefs might not have the luxury of really being super concerned with sourcing, maybe. I mean, do you think that this organization has helped kind of inspire other chefs to even think that way?
For sure. I think, you know, I think for me, the thing that inspired me was understanding that other chefs are doing it, so I had the opportunity to do it if I just connected, or if, you know, if I, you know, if I was to put myself in those positions. But, you know, I have a different restaurant than I had when I became a Chefs Collaborative member, you know, and so...
How so?
I have a restaurant that does much more volume than I would have ever, imagined of having, you
yeah.
know, as a 35-seat restaurant initially. So, you know, the perspective that I have on the collaborative has evolved. But I think that, you know, realistically what it comes down to is each individual needs to take a step back that's in the kitchen and look at what the big picture is of what we're actually doing on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, we have the opportunity to be in the, you know, the driver's seat of creating and making decisions that readily impact our environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when you put it into perspective in that way, I think many more food handlers will take a step back and look at it and be like, oh, okay,
yeah,
that's a real situation.
It's also becoming harder to turn a blind eye to it and say that you just didn't know, or you didn't
right.
know that was important, because of the transparency level
yeah.
in the cause and effectiveness of decision making, both in terms of, and when we say the environment now, we're not just talking about, you know, the earth, we're talking about our environment, and that means people, and that means human health, and mm-hmm. that means, you know, mental health, and that means everything from
so
the health of our business,
care, yeah.
how you take care of yourself, how you take care of your workers, how, you know, sustainability had this preconception that it only had to do with environmentalism, you know, for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only lens that we were looking at. And,
yeah.
and it then, and I agree with you, at that point, it becomes something that you maybe have a choice to not pay attention to. I'm not going to buy the eco-friendly this, or I can't use local this for this because the price doesn't work.
Right.
But when we talk about the
ability... I mean, those are real barriers,
they're
right?
They're huge barriers that I struggle with still, you know, and I'm 17 years into business, you know, and I still struggle with those every day, you know, and they're huge barriers that cannot be minimized.
So what motivates you to like work, you know, to kind of work past those barriers?
The idea that I have to lead by example and that my choices or my lack of choices have a cause and effect, and I can't be a hypocrite. And if I want people to do better and be nicer to each other and make more meaningful decisions, then I have to start with myself, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that's just the way that I am, and I want other people to be that way too. But I know that it starts with me, and if I can't make those decisions in my restaurant, in my business,
mm-hmm.
on a day-to-day basis that make it better for my staff and my community and my farmers,
mm-hmm.
then I'm living a lie, you know, or I'm not living the mission, or how can I possibly affect the broader community if I'm not taking care of the people?
You're leading by example.
Yeah. And,
absolutely.
And teaching and hoping to inspire chefs and culinary professionals to start with the people that are around their campfire first. And then that is really the most meaningful and impactful way that we can maintain like sustained change, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, what work is the collaborative doing if any, I don't know if this is outside the purview, you know, of the mission, but to inspire not just the next generation of chefs, but the next generation of cooks, at home cooks, people like me, you know, who, I'm just constantly blown away by the number of people who in the city don't cook. And I don't mean like, they don't cook very well or very often. I mean, people who like use their oven as kitchen storage. It's like storage, which there's a lot of those people out there. And I personally think if we get more people in the kitchen, it's going to lead to all of these amazing problems and solve like a lot of the issues in our food system. So this is a long-winded way to ask, like, is the collaborative doing any work to kind of create, like to inspire the next generation, to people just to cook more with their families at home?
I would say both direct and indirect. I mean, I would say broadly in terms of, again, understanding, you know, where your food's coming from, creating that connection. And so whether you're enjoying that in a restaurant or you're enjoying that at home, it's making sure you understand, you know, where and how it was sourced. I think that's one of those lessons that are really being amplified, you know, by the Chefs Collaborative. I think about events. Jake just mentioned the Harvest Barbecue that just happened in Rhode Island. I took my family to it. And again, for my family to see firsthand the work that the chefs are doing, the farms are doing in terms of providing, it helps make better decisions than when we go to the market and thinking about how do we purchase. And so those are all opportunities, both directly and indirectly, to have a bigger impact there. And so without question, it's really thinking about, again, how we think about that broader opportunity to create more awareness here.
What are, you know, if I want to put my like policy hat on right now, which is my favorite hat. what are you guys doing? What kind of advocacy work are you doing? If you know anything, you know, what initiatives are you really like advocating for? And does that happen mostly at the local level, or is that also at the, you know, state and federal level as well?
I think that's something that we have certainly worked with and partnered with other organizations on to sort of mobilize our boots on the ground, if you will, like our chefs, to activate to a cause.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've also learned that there are organizations that are really built well to work on specific policy. And, you know, like Catherine with James Beard organization,
mm-hmm.
and has done such a great job with advocacy work. And, you know, I know our chefs and myself included have really mobilized around a lot of the issues with Farm Bill, or you know, with with Chefs Collaborative, with Chef Ann Foundation. We've worked with Chef Ann and, you know, with Real School Food
Ann
campaign.
Cooper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's wonderful, and she's been involved with the collaborative. And so I think from issue to issue, like partnering with people that really have...
Are there any specific issues that you guys are like mobilizing around right now?
Seafood has been a big one. We've worked with EDF and the Environmental Defense Fund,
yep.
and on the Magnuson-Stevenson Act is a big one. So,
do you want to tell us? Do you want to give us a one of you want to jump in and explain what that is?
No, that's a big one. It's the national. I mean, I'm probably going to mess this up, but I think that the most distilled version, it is the single piece of legislation that helps to manage and protect our fisheries in mm-hmm. the country, and that's really oversimplifying it like tremendously, and it's a really complex thing, but it's in danger of being chopped up and being discarded in many ways, and it's not a perfect by any means, and it needs a lot of work and attention.
But that's an example of a bill that you've been mobilizing around.
Of a bill that our chefs have mobilized around. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been a big one in terms of specific legislation.
Right,
specific. I know the Farm Bill has also been something that a lot of chefs in the collaborative have been very concerned with and talking about
working
as well.
Working towards.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you guys can, you know, Jake, I'll give this one to you. Do you have like an example of how chefs have been? So we know that there are a lot of examples about how chefs have been like really great for kind of the movement towards more sustainable food system. But do you have any examples or something that comes to mind where like looking back, you can say like we may have hindered progress on a couple of these goals? No,
I mean, I can.
I'm sure they're out there.
Certainly,
yeah.
I think back in the, you know, it was like probably the beginning of my time or the middle of my time, like at the end of the '90s and the beginning of the 2000s. I think that we had a group of chefs that sort of made it too precious to be involved in sustainability, and it had to be a white tablecloth, owner-driven, like high-end restaurant,
yeah.
sort of to be involved in, like good food had to be, it was not accessible,
right.
as accessible. And I think we learned from that
uh-huh.
and have changed so much in that way. But
right.
we talk about that a lot, that, you know, good food has to be accessible and it also has to be scalable to create meaningful, impactful change.
Like, yeah.
you know, we have to teach universities and hospitals and larger restaurant companies. We have to get them to come to the table because they can impact huge, massive amounts of
yeah.
change. And that was something I would say probably 20 years ago that would not have
happened
or 15 yeah. years ago that might not have happened.
Yeah. What are some of the, you talked about the curriculum that you're helping to advise on for the culinary school, Johnson & Wales, right?
Mm, yeah.
Yes. What are some of the like key points that you are working to incorporate in that?
Awareness, I think, is one of the biggest ones. I mean, you know, there's been multiple times that we've sat in, you know, in these amphitheaters with these young individuals that are just, they're so gung-ho and ready to get out and into the cooking world, but just don't know in which way they can make an impact. So, you know, I think more so than maybe some of the nuts and bolts parts of the curriculum part, I think it's, you know, the sharing the stories of, you know, what it actually means to put, you know, that chef coat on, you know, and what kind of...
The power you can have.
Yeah, what
it.
Kind of meaningful impact that actually can be. I think that just by having, you know, some of these very simplified conversations with some of these individuals, I think it's really been very impactful, more so than, you know, maybe kind of creating this like sustainable outlook into a curriculum or into, you know, into this, into a classroom setting per se. You know, I feel like whenever we're doing this, I approach it from a very real life situation. You know, mm-hmm. I think people, and young people especially, tend to can potentially relate in some way. So it kind of works for me. So, yeah.
All right. We only have time for a couple more questions, but I want to know from each of you, who is somebody in the industry that you think is doing something super innovative right now? And what is it? And, you know, why do you think it's super innovative? Who wants to go first? Any takers? Mm-hmm. I know I put you guys all on the spot. Besides yourselves, obviously.
Well, I mean, I think one right off the bat that, you know, is innovating and has innovated and has been a huge part of, you know, some of the ideals that Chefs Collaborative lives by is Barton Siever. So I think he's someone that, you know, I still look at as an individual that lives and dies by what he preaches, and that's important.
Where is his restaurant? This is where I'm a little bit behind the culinary times.
Yeah. He
actually doesn't have a restaurant. Yeah. He does a lot of seafood advocacy work, uh-huh. and teaching, and he's an author, and he was a restaurant chef that now is working on a seafood school, like to train people about seafood sustainability. Yeah,
which is cool.
Yeah,
very totally. Cool.
Him and Adam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Adam's doing some great work as well.
I don't know Adam. Who's Adam?
Adam Danforth is a butcher and author, also doing on the educational side, uh-huh. like training. Training chefs. Adam is one of our board members, and also we do, you know, part of our Meat Matters focus on how to care more about sourcing and using better meats and whole animal, not just whole animal usage, that's part of it, but just sourcing and using meats. So Adam does a lot of advocacy and educational work around that. I think that's what you mean, right?
That's true.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
For me, I think that's a hard question because there's so many people doing incredible work right now. I think I will always, one person that always sticks out in my mind, who's not, doesn't have a restaurant anymore, but Michelle Nishan is mm-hmm. somebody I always look up to and say, like, that is like the North Star of like what you can accomplish from being a cook into a chef into like somebody that has evolved even beyond that, who I would still say he's a chef, you know, because that's what he's done his whole life, but he's now taken that and amplified it into so many different ways and is touching so many people like in on such an incredible level. And I think that work is really inspiring to me and to the, you know, I know to the collaborative as well, in terms of like working restaurant chefs. I think one of our Hugh Atchison is doing, you know, incredible work with his education and like in program.
Yep.
And that he's helped create.
Where is his restaurant? Is it Southern? I should know that.
Yes, it's definitely Southern. Yeah. Yes. I'm just trying to remember what city it's in.
I can't remember.
He's got a couple.
Yeah. You know. But he's a father and he's a chef, and he's used his voice and his passion to really make a meaningful impact in young children's lives and in the education system as a whole.
Yeah.
And I think that's, again, it just really speaks volumes about the power of a chef and the power and platform of somebody that what they can do with their voice.
Absolutely. Mark, anyone who's like, you know, who you're like, look at this person, someone to watch, doing really amazing things.
I'm going to highlight a different part of the food space, and I want to talk about a distributor. I want to talk about someone here called Baldor. And we think about some of the work they're doing around they have a program called Sparks, and it's really scraps spelled backwards, but the idea of how to take food waste. And they've turned this now into a product that they're selling out to restaurants. Mm-hmm. And they've been able to rethink, again, very fundamentally what had been waste and turn it into a business stream. So they're changing, they're innovating around, you know, that part. And that is really one of the toughest things when we talk about how to have broad impact, is that last mile and how to do something efficiently. And so they're working with their own waste that they have, but they also work with different farms and farmers around second harvest and recovering product or ugly produce. And they're able to then be able to funnel that out to the chefs, who are then able to then create something impactful. But they're doing it at a scale. And that's really when we think about impact. And so they're changing some of the, I think, business fundamentals around that. And so Baldor is a great example around, and they also have this what's called a local pledge, and a commitment that, you know, they will source and provide something, you know, from a particular purveyor. But one of the challenges you have with local is the availability, or perhaps the availability because of, you know, weather or different issues. And they have a commitment around substituting other local products. And so they're changing the equation about thinking about business. And so you need more partners in that, in terms of being able to think about the broader impact.
Mm-hmm. Yes, from the industry perspective, absolutely. And I was like, and from the business and consumer perspective, our harvest, where I have the wonderful opportunity of working, we connect local, you know, consumers to their local chefs and fishermen and producers through our online platform. But we're doing something kind of similar, but on the direct-to-consumer side. So hopefully we'll have that that scale that Baldor does. But no, they're doing really great things, and I think it's important to highlight all aspects of the supply chain and how, you know, that intersect with kind of like a chef's overall influence in choosing who you, what distributors you do work with. All right. Anything else that coming down the pike, like what's next for the organization, exciting initiatives, events coming up in each of your communities nationally?
Yeah. We have another great, Meat Matters event going on in New Mexico, which is our newest, local chapter, if you will. And Adam Danforth and myself are flying down there to do some workshops with the chefs and talk about, you know, animal utilization and sourcing and do some butchery demos. So that's something that we've done a couple times, and we're excited to get down to New Mexico and meet the new chefs down there.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's fun.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This was really great.
Yeah, thanks so much for having
us. Thank you.
Absolutely.
And Hugh's places are in Georgia, by the way.
Atlanta. Oh, Georgia. Atlanta. Georgia, yeah. Oh, and why, where
I don't
can
know
we
why
go?
I spaced for a minute.
Where I'm like the South, right? Yeah. Where can we go for more information? Our listeners go for more information on the collaborative.
So you can check us out at chefscollaborative.org. We also have an Instagram page and a Twitter page and a Facebook page as well.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Okay. Big thanks to our sponsors for their generous support. My show music is by Tim Archer. All episodes of Eating Matters are available on the HRN website or as a podcast, wherever you can find a podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe. And you know what? Leave me a comment. Let me know what you think. I'm Jenna Liu, and thank you for listening. I'm Jenna Liu, and I've been way too much today.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.